Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season 3, episode 1, Polaris. Polaris, if you're fancy. Aaron, what do you think of this first episode?
I really enjoyed this first episode, with two prominent exceptions, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Oh, no.
I love the opening montage of like what's happened in the last 10 years of fictional history, the fact that the Beatles, you know, because John Lennon didn't get murdered in the 80s. They're back together. They have had a reunion. They've somehow overcome the Yoko Ono problem. There's nuclear fusion in the mid 90s, causing a recession of global warming. There's a lot of cool stuff. I think it's another good sign that this show has effortlessly thrown the ball forward 10 years and we are back in. I feel like in this episode, I'm fully in sync with the characters.
Yeah.
But for the first time in a space disaster episode, I felt like For All Mankind kind of wanted me to turn my brain off and not ask too many questions. And it's the return of the Karen plot. Karen, Danny. They yeah. Right on the first episode, yeah. Baiting us with this fucking don't be cruel bullshit. And they kill off her husband? I'm not liking it. I'm not liking that development, Jim.
They're being cruel. What? They're being cruel to you.
They're being very cruel. What'd you think?
I don't know. I don't have a huge problem with the Danny Karen stuff. I think, it's gross, but it's supposed to be gross. Like, what do you want?
You're telling me when that music started up and they zoomed in on her face, you were like, fuck yes, I can't wait to see where this goes.
I wasn't
goes.
Like, fuck yes, but I wasn't like, oh my God, this shit again? Like, you seem to have a hate boner for this particular plot line,
Leave that fucking boner word out of your mouth in any discussion of this plot. No, I'm not having it.
Don't it's be cruel to that hate like boner, Aaron.
Oh, Jesus.
Don't be cruel to it. Okay. So I like this episode. There are, I think, a couple of points where it's like, okay, turn your brain off on this plot with the gravity increasing. But I really liked how they visualized all that stuff for the most part. It's very cool when it's one of those things where like I was watching it and I'm like, okay, this is a problem. And I see them like propose a solution to it. I'm like, well, here's the problem with that. And then they immediately hit me with like, oh yeah, no, we thought of that. And yes, it is a problem. And they're going to have issues. Like when they were talking about like, oh, we got to get to the elevators, right? I'm like, does an elevator even work in this much gravity? Or is this going to be a real problem for them? And then, one scene later, it's like, oh fuck, here comes the elevator crashing down. Yeah. That stuff was really good and layered out in a way that I felt gratified as a viewer, thinking one step ahead and knowing that the show was right there with me. So that was really cool. Yes, I like to see where we are with all these characters. Danielle kind of like taking Ed's spot as the main sort of commander at NASA. Like I don't know, she's not the head honcho, right? But she is like the person who's been on all the missions. And
yeah, they mentioned she's the most prolific one. She's commanded the most. Yeah.
Yeah. So she gets probably the highest profile stuff. And Ed is getting fucking old, right? I mean, he was pretty old for like an astronaut last season. I think he's like too old to be an astronaut this season, pretty much. I don't know. You get in your 50s and your diabetes starts to fall apart.
He got the diabetes too, right? Seems like.
Right? Definitely something going on.
He's taking HGH to...
Maybe
to keep up with the young kids. I'm gonna call it diabetes until I see some roid rage or some back knee. But
that makes sense. I liked all that stuff. Jimmy's the wild card here. That's Gordo and Tracy's youngest son, the brother of Danny. He's the wild card. I don't know what they're going to do with him. He seems like a loose cannon. He's very depressed and sad about his parents' death. It's affected him a lot more than his brother. I don't know where they're going with that. So look forward to seeing more of that. Hopefully it's something interesting. And I was like really excited for Aleta this episode where she gets to go to the moon.
If you got long-term fans, especially club members, might know that we talked about this on our premium Off the Clock. And one of the things that was my ongoing concern is, where are they going with this little Mexican girl? Because it just seemed like it was, you know, so in the first season, kind of superfluous. But that scene this week packed a real emotional wallop that it wouldn't have if they hadn't have spent that time three seasons ago investing in that, because I got really caught up, like, oh my God, can you imagine being a guy who brings his daughter across to Rio Grande and, you know, sets up in this country, gets deported and has to leave his girl behind, and yet she makes it to the fucking moon. My God,
And I love all the work that they show her putting in for that, right? It's not like she's some just some savant genius who has everything easy. She puts in the fucking work and eventually gets
overcome a lot of societal problems, a lot of emotional, perhaps even mental problems. Seems like she's got a lot of stability and a good. So I was really happy for her. They really the time they've spent in investing that character in the last 20 years of the show's history really paid off. I thought
for sure. I really liked the episode. Maybe it's time to get into that montage that you were talking about at the very beginning.
Let's do it.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next Pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly Lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, we start off with, I'm just going to kind of take it for all the things that are different that I noticed from our actual history, because they do this. They mix in like real things that happened with fake things that never happened, and people who are real but different things happened to them than happened in our actual history. So I'm going to go over some of the ones that might be big or important and are different from how our actual history went. So this guy Hart, I don't know how many people remember this dude. I certainly didn't, but he became president in this universe. In our universe, he dropped out of the race after some extramarital affair scandal.
Isn't that hilarious in context? Because I vaguely remember, you know, I was starting to pay attention in this kind of like pre-Bill Clinton era. And he's this rising star of the Democratic Party. It seemed like he was heading on the way to the Democratic nomination, and he's hamstrung by an extramarital affair.
Right.
Which, again, is hilarious in context of Bill Clinton and just 40 years on in politics. It was elected. He is running a re-election campaign right
now.
And
he gets reelected. I mean, I think he's actually president during the 1996 timeline here.
Oh, see, I was wondering if he would be running against. Maybe not, if they're setting him up against
Ellen.
Ellen, thank you, the senator from Texas.
They might be, because so they mentioned 1988.
But they got Bill Clinton. No, he'd probably run his two terms, and now Bill Clinton is going to.
You're right.
He's
they do.
He's
show
the Democratic
Bill.
Nominee. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if they'll get. They'll have a fake Bill Clinton on the show.
I don't know. Slick Willie. That would be interesting. So they signed a lunar peace treaty. So that kind of glosses over a lot of the problems we had last year between the Soviets and the
dividing
US.
The moon in half.
Sure. Did we get the light side or the dark side?
Hope we got half and half.
Yeah.
Got like a Neapolitan kind of thing going.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Thatcher is apparently killed in an IRA bombing. That's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the Ireland English relationship looks like at this point. If you're killing people of that import.
Yeah, does that put off resolution or the postponement or the armistice, or does that increase it? Because that's a pretty fucking
right.
It's a pretty fucking big head to lop off.
Yeah, I don't know. Some stuff changed in geopolitics too, with Gorbachev expanding influence into South America and Mexico. I think
apparently the Soviet controls the entire. Of Central America down.
Yeah, and Congress is securing the southern border and all kinds of stuff.
Mm.
Michael Jordan gets drafted by the Portland Trailblazers instead of some dude that I don't think anybody's ever heard of, Sam Bowie.
Oh no, that's a pretty infamous draft controversy. Who went first, who went second.
I was reading that apparently the two teams that picked first and second picks needed centers, and Michael Jordan was not a center, and so they decided to pass him. And the Bulls picked him up, obviously, in our real world, but here, Portland Trailblazers got him. I don't think it's going to be a significant plot point. Mm-hmm. What will, though, is this nuclear fusion breakthrough by Ayesa, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. Is the name of the guy who owns the company Helios.
And co-discoverer Richard Hilliard, who, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell, is a real guy. Like I can tell that he's a real, but I have no idea who he is. And what's wild is that he's later in a headline accused of treason, of supplying the Russians secrets as a spy. So it's like... Hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he is more of a composite guy. But if anyone knows who this Richard Hilliard is being alluded to, I would love to know.
And there are some big changes because of nuclear fusion, right? There's a couple of shots of newspaper articles that say, or newscasts that say, global warming is receding because of the decreased fossil fuel usage because of the nuclear fusion stuff. So it seems like, you know, as a planet, as a species, we're kind of headed in the right direction. Ellen wins her Texas Senate race. So she is a senator. And then by the end of this montage, she is running for president.
Yep.
We get to see a thing called Polaris Space Tours, which if you recognize the name Polaris, it's because the rest of this episode is telling us that, hey, that's actually Karen's company that she co-founded, and they will be doing, you know, the hotel game in orbit by the
end of
this episode.
It's kind of her end game, because her and Sam, you know, she sold the outpost to him. They apparently gotten married and
taken
the outpost.
$80 billion?
Yeah.
How much money did the outpost sell
for? Well, so she not that much.
The space game.
But she took it global. She took the franchise global, and they got married. And that's one way to get half of a fortune invested into a space station hotel. To
marry a VC,
investor,
sure,
angel investor.
China joins the space race with a moon base.
Yep.
So development.
Hopefully,
there.
In the Soviet half, we don't have them commie bastards running around on the United States side. Jesus. What would happen? What could even happen?
Beatles do a reunion tour, as you said, with John Lennon not being dead. Helios wins the NASA helium mining contract. And you see a little bit of the fallout of that in this episode, which we'll talk about when we get there. North Korea abandons their missile program to focus on space. And there's definitely fallout from that this episode.
Yep.
Global warming. Oh, we talked about that. Statue of Gordo and Tracy on the moon. I would say that's probably the first statue on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid do a movie called Love in the Skies, which I'm pretty sure is not real.
Yeah, that's based on based on the Gordo and Trace. I think that's pretty good casting. I like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think Gordo came off a little looking pretty good in that casting, but you know.
Oh, did he?
I mean, Dennis Quaid is better looking than Gordo. Come on.
What? Dennis Quaid?
All right. I'm not saying Gordo's a bad looking man. I'm saying Dennis Quaid, it feels like an upgrade.
I don't know the actor's name who plays Gordo, but damn, I feel bad for you. All right. There's a space telescope launched and it's named the Thomas Paine. I don't think this is real.
Hubble. They just called it because he died and he was probably a big, big champion for it. So just those little butterfly flaps, you know?
Mm-hmm. Another thing about Gordo and Tracy, their son, Danny, becomes an astronaut and goes to Jamestown.
Mm-hmm.
So he got through his naval training, apparently. And the United States set their eyes on a 1996 mission to Mars. We are currently in 1996. So we're like... Or no, we're 92, sorry. We're like on the lead up to that, right?
Are we at 92? I thought we were at 95 for some reason.
95? Maybe. I thought we were 92 because I thought they said like the Mars mission is in 4 years. But
okay.
Well, the 92,
that would line up with the presidential election of Clinton versus Wilson.
The Nirvana grunge phenomenon, because Kurt Cobain, you don't have to deal with his 94 death yet. He could just be very popular.
The other thing that changed because Gary Hart was president is the United States did not intervene in Kuwait. That's the other thing that
I didn't pick up on that. I thought they were just saying the United States has invaded Kuwait.
apparently they're I guess Iraq probably had Soviet backing and BTFO'd the United States out of there.
They can take over all of South America and Mexico and still back the Iraqis. Man,
should have held them at the 39th parallel. Now look what happened.
I assume it's still Saddam in charge over there, right?
Almost assuredly, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and the economy is soaring. Like there seems to be a lot of upswing for America and the world here.
A lot of opportunities, yep.
Yeah. And then we get into the episode proper where Karen gets a call. She wakes up and it turns out, she's waking up in her space suite in the Polaris Hotel in orbit. And it says, hey, you got to be ready to see your guests. And it's a montage, a series of waking up things. I would say Karen's is significantly more glamorous than Margo's because, man, Margo wakes up. We knew this about Margo, right? She's just a workaholic.
This is for all mankind. Uh-huh. I mean, this. I think we've gotten ever more elaborate and more like official because I think the first she was not supposed to be sleeping at NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's got a full bedroom suite,
which is adjacent to director's office. Yeah. Her office, yeah.
Yeah.
So she gets up, gets ready for work, makes a slim fast drink, or I guess pops a can.
Did you wait before? Did piano. You know something going on at the back of her neck?
No.
There was some weird kind of like diamond hatch kind of strangeness on the back of her neck, which I thought the episode would address, but they never do. And the other thing is, since we're watching screeners, it's entirely possible that they're doing that some kind of VFX thing that they were going to do to add some aging to her or to match up the wig and her hairline or something. And sometimes that stuff doesn't get done by the screeners. So I'm going to be curious when it debuts. I'm going to watch it in high def to see, because that also could be hinting at some kind of new drug treatment or who knows what.
Wow. What if she just has like this flowing mane of hair? like a Fabio-esque mane of hair that they digitally insert. Because
she's got a neck
tattoo.
In
the show, she's
yeah.
got short hair. But
she's got the pixie cut, yeah.
Yeah, at least in the copy we saw. Yeah, plays a little bit of piano. Her assistant comes in with her agenda. She's got a Mars mission that she has to pick commanders for. There are some priority launches for Helios. And the thinly veiled bribe comes in of fresh fish from some Nordic country. There's a failed North Korean launch. They need to do repairs to the Thomas Paine telescope. I think those are going well. Space tourism stuff seems like, and then she comes out to Mission Control where she's in charge of the mission for testing. I mean, she's doing Mars Mission Control and they're testing a booster rocket. Alayda is also working there. She's actually the one in control of this test, and a booster test fails, and Margo tells Alayda to keep working on it.
Captain Pisspants is there too. Him and Alayda are working close together, buried all those hatchets.
He's been promoted somehow. He's more of an overseer.
They introduced Chekhov's failed North Korean launch at the beginning of this episode. Also, I think it's interesting that they're setting up this, like, that Margo is a super straight-laced, won't even accept a bribe of a fish platter.
Yeah.
And yet we also know she spent the last 10 years helping with the Russian space program with clear lines she won't draw. So it's like, it's going to be interesting to see all that work out. I also thought it was cool that they're either using Apple Newtons or maybe a very early Palm Pilot.
Huh. Okay.
That those things never really took off in our world because cell phones just kind of took over all that.
Yeah.
But I thought it's interesting because I think that's a few years early, and it'll be interesting to see if like Palm Pilot or something becomes like a dominant cell phone player or something because of some weird historical ball bounce.
Yeah, I'm sure HP would license that branding pretty cheaply.
I never had a Newton, but I was a pretty early adopter of Palm Pilot. And I really, man, I still think you can write with that graffiti.
Yeah.
You can write super, super fast. It's probably one of my favorite input systems to this day.
Well, now you could pay like $1,500 to get an iPad and an Apple Pencil and do the same thing that you could do for like $200 in 1995.
I wonder if the handwriting recognition is as good as, because graffiti you had to learn because they
pretty
were not
good.
Exactly alphabet. But like once you learned it, it was 100% pretty much rock solid.
Yeah. I really love Margo just waking up and getting ready. Like there's such a, like I said, a difference between the way Karen wakes up in her silk pajamas and like, you know, out there orbiting Earth. And then there's Margo in this dingy office, like hopping into her tights for the day, like practically falling over. It's hilarious.
Do you think they use a body double? Because that's pretty convincing older middle-aged woman makeup. And I noticed it never showed her face and her body when she's running around in her like pantyhose and her brassiere, doing the front class brassiere rotate 180 degree.
Yeah, I feel like it's harder to do the body makeup than it is the face makeup now. Because they do a pretty good job on
that. The aging makeup is pretty convincing, to be honest. Like it was like when I first saw like Ed and Danielle, I was a little bit like, huh. But then like 30 seconds into it, I just like that's the new normal. They're just old folk now.
Yeah. And there's a. Something that her assistants tell her is something about the shuttle Enterprise, which, I mean, could be a real thing. I'm not certain of that, whether it is or not, but also
the Enterprise
Star Trek.
Shuttle was an absolute real thing.
Is it?
That's but it's interesting because Enterprise was the flight, the unused prototype. It was a fully functional, but it was like they only used it for glide tests.
Huh. Okay.
And in our history, like I wonder if they're saying that they're using the space shuttle so much, and apparently none of them exploded, that they like pushed the Enterprise into service.
Could be. Yeah, especially with space tourism being a thing, you would need more ships, right?
But that was the first shuttle ever built, so of course you got to call it the Enterprise.
Yeah. So then we get to the Soviets announcing that they'll be launching a manned mission to Mars in 1996 as well. Margo's response is, we're going to work to get there first. And she's also under pressure to pick the commander for the Mars mission so they can start training.
Because the Russians already got their man picked out.
Yeah. And that leads us over to Ed and Danielle arriving at Hotel Polaris, or the Polaris Orbital Hotel, or just the Polaris Hotel. They have like six names for this thing, and it kind of annoys me. And they see this, they arrive in orbit, and they dock, and they get to the inside, which very much looks like 2001, A Space Odyssey. Like,
so
I couldn't fucking believe
like,
it.
They intentionally did that as homage, right?
They had to.
We just watched this last year, and it's the curvature of the space, the all-white design.
The placement of the tables and chairs. Yeah, it's...
If it was a Hilton, it would have been just dead on.
Uh-huh. And they see this welcome video featuring what we find out is the co-founder of Polaris, Karen Baldwin. And then Karen shows up with her new husband, Sam. And we also find out, oh, Ed's married too, to a new woman named Yvonne, who we're just meeting. Karen is very cordial, but Ed is pretty awkward with the small talk here.
Yeah, very awkward. I like the Danielle and Ed, you know, the old Bobs kind of like busting each other's balls and all, but also very much jockeying for position for who's going to be, because they both know they're the top dogs respectively. And it's going to be one of those two. And they're both like, oh, I'll be on my, no, I'm going to be on my, no, I'm going to be. I liked it.
Yeah. And the other thing this scene is doing is kind of getting us slightly familiar with the geography of the station, right? Like we see them dock, we see them in an elevator arguing about those things, busting each other's balls, and then we see them on the outer ring. So it's setting up the geography for later when all the gravity stuff goes down.
And I got to say, I thought throughout this episode, they did a really great job of like swooping in and out of the space station, like actually diving through its skin that really gave you a good.
It
really gave you a good indication of where everything was. Like you'd be on the space station, then they'd pull outside of it so you could see the big view. And then you'd start with the big view overall of the disaster and you'd go penetrate the skin and be right. They did a really good job of joining all those tracking shots together, making it look like it was seamless.
Yeah. I do wonder what the gravity's like in the center. Do they say it's zero gravity?
It has to be.
It would have to be, right? Unless they're also spinning that somehow, but I can't imagine.
I loved Ed's windbreaker, his very 90s dad look.
Okay.
It's very, very cool.
We also find out Danielle is remarried and has a stepson.
Mm-hmm.
So his name's Isaiah. He'll come into play a little bit later, though not significantly. They're just setting that character up.
You also see, like, because there was this kind of private space travel, God help us. There is a rivalry because they also, Ed kind of bristles at the reminder that Karen has poached several NASA astronauts from them for this commercial endeavor. That's probably got to be, you know, somewhat sticking in NASA's collective crawls that they spend millions of dollars training these guys and gals and getting the mission experience. And then the private sector goes and says, we'll pay $1 million a year to fly this fucking milk run. And then they lose it.
it's subsidizing the cost of private space travel for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So then Margo asks Molly what the holdup is on choosing a commander. We're here in Molly's office. Margo's stumping for Danielle. She thinks, she's right for the job because she's got all these very buttoned down qualities. And Molly thinks the exact opposite because she's too by the book. Molly wants Ed Baldwin. Margo thinks, you know, he's arrogant. He's got a temper. He's old. We see him while they're saying this, injecting insulin or something. Could be HGH. We don't know. And they argue for a while and then agree to continue the discussion later. And we see in this scene also Molly is reading Braille, right? So her eye problems have progressed.
And definitely I think her eyes have a cloudy quality to them. It seems like she's legally blind. Mm-hmm. She's got a seeing eye dog.
Yep.
I'm not sure how blind she is, but because she still kind of looks up to address Margo, but that, yeah, it, but she's still badass, still smoking in NASA, not giving a fuck about that. And I don't know, like, there's an interesting push pull here because Margo's like, you know, why is it this in much into the age where we're building rockets on the moon? And we're still hiring all these flyboys and test jockeys and all this other stuff. Like 50% of the ASCANs are still military pilots and test pilots versus, you know, Molly saying like, hey, NASA's mission might change, but space is still a cast iron bitch and it'll kill you if you blink at it wrong. So you do need people who can, but also in the 3-year Mars mission, only 3 months of that will be spent in actual spaceflight. So where do you draw the line? And seems like this season's going to have something to say about those, you know, well, the nature of the hazards of space still.
And I think this episode does too.
You
know, talk about thinking on your feet when gravity is increasing by the second and your orbital platform is about to disintegrate because of it. You need somebody like Danny who can take a chance, go out and do something that isn't by the book and fix the situation. Right. Yeah. So I see both points of view here, and I don't think there's a clear winner in this argument.
No.
Maybe it takes a mix. Maybe it takes all kinds. Who knows? Anyway, Gordo's kid gets married at Hotel Polaris. First ever wedding in space. And this is going to be kind of the central focal point for the next half of this episode.
I really loved the man and wife astronaut cake toppers, and I also loved how they were used as a barometer for the gravity on the station as we go through the episode. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, no, that was great. Then we get Margo driving to a payphone to call Sergey, which I have to call him Sergey here. I can't call him Serge like the boys.
Gotta keep Sergey. It straight. We got a Sergey and a Serge. They're doing, I think they're spelled the same.
I think so. One's French and one's Russian. He asks for help solving a technical problem and she agrees to help. And we find out, you know, he helped her previously. There's been this exchange of technical information to help each other out. And of course, we know, as we saw last season at the very end, Sergey is keeping her on the hook as a Russian insider, even though she doesn't know it.
Does it feel like it's realistic how stretched out this plot line has been, like that they spent 10 years. Like, it sounds like they haven't gotten nothing from her, that she's helped them. And he credits her the fact that Russia is still in the space race with things she's contributed to them. And of course she's quick to point out the things that he's contributed back. But it's just now that the Russian paymasters and whatnot are leaning on Sergey to, you know, really lean on Margo. Did that track with you, or?
It seems like a little bit long, but you know, the mechanisms here can turn pretty slowly when you're trying to convert somebody to your side without them realizing it. So yeah. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on that.
Sounds like the Russians won't make it to Mars unless they get that nuclear fusion drive. Cause like, man, I tell you what, getting to Mars in 3 months is kind of, well, getting to Mars and back, I guess 3 months of total flight time is kind of crazy.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good.
The other thing is, did you see the protest outside the Johnson Space Center?
I did. I was assuming these are oil industry workers who are protesting.
There's
got to
be like oil and coal
mining.
Right? They have to be, yeah. That they're getting
these.
Because
they're protesting the helium-3 mining, right?
Yes.
Is what their signs
Energy
say.
Energy justice.
Mm-hmm. And they're taking our jobs, that sort
taking,
of thing.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, we need jobs, not energy, which I don't know. Feel like you need both.
I need a big mix of both, but you know, living in 2022, it's hard to argue about knocking global warming down, but
right. You know, Sergey says, hey, I'm excited to see you at the conference this year. He hangs up. The government calls him and says you need to push harder for more details about the program. And then we go back to Polaris, where Amber's maid of honor is giving a respectable speech about the relationship, and then Danny's brother, Jimmy, also gives a speech, but it doesn't go quite as well. He is very angry and affected by his parents' death.
What are they getting at here? It seems like they're maybe setting up this idea of NASA. They're being these doubting Thomases about NASA, that NASA's covering things up. And or it might just be his personal opinion on it, because, you know, the thing is that he doesn't. He thinks it's bullshit that his parents rekindled their love affair up and on the moon. But that actually happened.
It did. Yeah.
So I wonder where they're going with that, because he's completely off base of what, you know, the NASA propaganda is essentially exactly what happened. But
he's
doesn't
always
buy
been
it.
Kind of jealous of his brother's relationship with his parents. Right. Like, he was the good son and Jimmy was kind of the outcast.
The weirdo. Yeah. The black sheep.
Yeah, so I feel like it's a lot more of that. It's 10 years of that just festering. When
NASA,
you have no potential to get validation from your parents, right?
Yeah, there's something about NASA, because I think NASA is broadly politically popular no matter who you are. But like, if you have NASA doing these things where people are dying and there's maybe details in the official account that don't add up, and now they're taking jobs in the oil, I wonder if NASA will be politicized, where like they're seen as pro or against. But I don't know, because like their gal is running for the Republican nomination and got it for president. So it might be something interesting to explore, the politicization of space travel as we go on.
Yeah, and I think when you throw in the privatization of it too, that increases the potential for the politicization, right?
The other thing we found out by, what's Danny's brother's name? Jeffrey?
Jimmy.
Jimmy, thank you. Danny went through a little drinking problem, or maybe drug addiction problem. You got to think that like the rejection of Karen plus his parents' immediate death, might have been a lot for him to deal with.
But he still made it through the fucking astronaut training program, right? So how hard could it really have been on him? But
I mean, I don't know, because we've seen a lot of hard drinking astronauts on this show.
I suppose.
But it is. I think it's going to be interesting going forward, because I've got some dark predictions for Danny by the end of this episode. I think Danny might be a quadriplegic, almost certainly a paraplegic.
Wow. Okay. All right. I think I know where you're going with that, but interesting. So Margo goes to Elaita's house for dinner, where we meet Javi, Victor, which are her son and husband, respectively. And Javi's driving Elaita crazy with distractions. Her father's also there, and he is... I don't know. Did he come back last season, or is this a interim... Like between seasons development.
Yeah, I think it's between seasons development that she, with her increased money and political clout, has done the legal work necessary to get him undeported and get his green card.
I was having trouble remembering what was happening with him. I knew he got deported, but
yeah, which I thought was great. I'm wondering if they're doing something. Do you think that Octavio is just this careless about his son-in-law's lactose intolerance, or he's just like old person, kind of like in denial about people having food allergies, or
maybe
are they hinting that he's gotten some early dementia?
Ooh, he didn't seem like it to me, but
she said the word he forgets, and the way his affect of that seemed like a guy who was kind of caught. Like, oh, but didn't want to make a big deal out of it.
Oh, boy. Yeah. They're going to pile some more family trauma on Elaita.
I think it's something they're introducing because he's still pretty young to get full blown, even early onset Alzheimer's dementia. But it might be something that they might be setting up a sad storyline for season four, is what I would guess.
Yeah. Damn.
But I don't know if they if we're in 92, like you say, and they're going to flash forward to 95, 96 over the series, and maybe it will progress. I don't know. But so something I'm a little sensitive to that kind of thing anyway. And something I picked up on.
Gotcha. I think you're right. I think we must be in 96, right? Because not only has Hart been president, and they mark that with a time of 88, and then Clinton is also president. So
is he president right now, or are they running against?
I think he's running.
So that'd be 92. The election? I think you're right. I think it's 92. And we're going to flat, because they do that in the other seasons too, where it's like you will jump forward a couple years during the season to let things kind of progress too. So
okay, yeah, maybe we'll get to 96 with the Mars mission, but that'll probably happen sooner rather than later, right? I mean, the Mars mission can't be the season finale.
No,
this whole season is going to be about getting to Mars and then being on Mars, I would think.
I think so too.
But we'll see.
We see him driving buggy in the trailer. We see him driving buggies around. So yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like first season where it is about the race to get there, but also to get in the base going. And they'll probably, I don't know, man, are they going to do another land invasion of Mars? Like, how many times are we going to see space war?
Right.
I guess that's like asking how many times we're going to see Earth war. Well, yeah. We're still going at it in 2022. So.
Mm-hmm. So then we get back to the wedding and there's a limbo contest going on. Jimmy and Danielle's stepson, Isaiah, sneak off to smoke a joint in space. Probably the first wedding in space and the first joint smoked in space.
Boy, I don't know, man. There's no astronaut has smuggled any. That'd be tough, though.
Who smokes? The only person we've seen smoke is Molly's husband and Karen.
Yeah,
I mean, Molly.
Astronaut take a handkerchief up with them and roll that up and smoke it.
Sure.
I don't know what it'd do for you, but
yeah, I think Molly smokes, so she's probably smoked a joint in space.
Yeah.
Anyway, a video message from Ed and Karen's daughter, Kelly, is played. And then Danny and Amber share their first dance, which is disturbingly to the song that Danny and Karen banged to, I think, last season. Or if not banged to, then like what directly preceded that.
Led to banging. It was the solid rocket booster that led to a very inappropriate sexual relationship.
Makes Karen very uncomfortable, rightly so. Danny never acknowledges this. I kept expecting Danny, when he's dancing, to when they spin around to Karen, for him to look up at her meaningfully, and he doesn't. Which does that tell you that this is this whole song thing is just Danny having this significant song in his life and transferring that emotion into this marriage? Or is this Danny being extra sly, doing something he knows Karen will notice, and not looking at her to make it extra sly?
I was like, don't you fucking make eye contact, right, Danny. I will reach into the screen and beat you. I am not doing that. But like, I feel like it is something the showrunners doing to fuck with him. Because if he looked at her significantly, then you'd know.
Yes.
But like, how do you forget that's, I don't think there's no fucking chance some 19-year-old kid forgets the music that he played to bang his smoke show surrogate mother. I know there's no way that, I mean, it might be like his just kind of like my main squeeze song, but
that's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. Karen didn't take it as, oh, that's sweet. No. You know, so like I'm going to follow her lead on that. But hold on.
Okay. Me too.
Question. Uh-huh. How the hell did Kelly get sidelined at McMurdo? She was going to be a hot shot F-14 Top Gun Tom Cruise pilot. And
what's McMurdo?
That's the Antarctic base.
Oh, shit. Is she a research scientist?
She's down at the bottom of the world. And the other question is, why the hell can't she talk to them? They have real-time communication to Earth. Like,
yeah.
I thought. But it was clearly a recorded message. So I wonder what they're going to do with Kelly. They're surely not going to sideline her all season like that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how she can be important in an Arctic base.
The thing breaks out and she's the only one that can stop it. But no, I mean, it's not like McMurdo is like some kind of bullshit. I mean, that's pretty prestigious and there's not a lot. I mean, at this point, there might be more people that have been on the moon base than there has been that. Still, like, if you can go to the moon or Mars, I would want to do that rather than the bottom of the world.
Yeah. Can you survive longer outside McMurdo or outside Polaris?
McMurdo, outside for sure.
You think
for sure.
So?
But surprisingly,
not by much,
Yeah, without equipment, if you threw out naked both, you'd die pretty quick.
Yep. All right, North Korean space debris hits Hotel Polaris, causing a thruster to burn and gravity to rise because it's spinning it faster and faster. I guess gravity's only rising on the outer edges, right? Or outside of the very center. The wedding celebration continues, where Ed and Karen talk, and they get news about the rising gravity from the commander of the base, who I think might be named LaForge or LaFord.
It's
LaForde,
it's
right?
It's a very long name. And it's pronounced very French. I didn't think it was LaForge, but that'd be cool if they had a chief engineer
right?
named LaForge.
I thought the commander here was LaForge, but I could be wrong.
I like how they slowly, like, they use the cake, the couple on the cake, her throwing the flowers and misjudging the throw. It's just like slow things are just kind of off at a subconscious level. But here's my first problem.
Yep.
No fucking way does this space station not have a way to shut that valve off from inside the space station. That's insane.
Oh, gotcha.
There's not some access panel that you can just go and cut. There's no chance that there's no way to cut that thing off from a central, like multiple points of cutoff.
I don't know, man. This is the private space program. This is not NASA. The redundancies might not be there.
Then corners, Polaris deserves costs. To fly apart and get destroyed because like that's I just think that's like I mean yeah. if I you know it's like yeah like yeah, imagine if you had to go like three blocks down to shut the main water off your house. No, mm-hmm. there's like 17 different ways to shut the water off of your house, including at the street. So like I thought this was this is the first time I thought the show is like okay, and there'll be multiple times, but I thought this was the first big kind of like well what that doesn't really. Makes sense, but maybe it is a commentary on privates. But yeah, just like why would you design it that way? It's you can see the hose and the pipes literally hugging the hab walls. So like not putting I just felt lazy. I don't know.
Yeah, like where is the fuel coming from? Shut it off at the source, right?
Or the fact that all four counterspin adjustment thrusters working together couldn't overpower one of the main spin thrusters. I thought that was weird, kind of weird too, but not the worst.
No, it's not the worst. I have big question marks coming up here, but
okay,
we'll talk about it. The other thing they decide is here is they're going to EVA to go shut off that thruster because, like you said, it's the shutoff valve is outside at the thruster itself. Karen and Sam decide they don't want to alert the guests yet, though, so they keep the celebration going.
Oh, I want to take your temperature on something else.
Hmm.
Do you think that Ed knows that Karen and Danny fucked? Because I was going back and forth when I watched this the second time when he was asking her. It's like, I've never heard the song played like that before. I thought he looked at her significantly, but Karen didn't react as if that was what he was trying to do. So it might just been him making small talk about the song. So,
yeah, I don't think she told him who.
Okay.
She banged, just that she banged somebody.
All right.
So then we go to Aleda's family dinner again, and it's ending. Aleda has a pretty good idea for a technical fix on the rocket booster that they're testing, and Marga decides to send her up to the moon to fix it, and she is extremely excited. So is her family.
Great
scene. And I guess with the program, the space program as it stands in this universe, you can send someone to the moon with a week's notice. You know, you get space tourism. They don't need to prep for months and months.
Just throw on the next fusion shuttle.
Right? Send them up there.
I thought, again, I talked about this at the beginning, but this is such a great scene. All of them hugging together, the multiple generations, the hard work, and the quintessential American immigrant story. It's a beautiful thing. I was moved.
Yeah, totally. Margo goes back to her office where she plays the record that Sergei sent her. That's kind of all that happens. She's really enjoying this music. I loved this part of their relationship developing that clearly they send records back and forth.
And that's how they send, I think that's their, that you're understood. That's how they send their secrets to each other. They're like fold them up into the liner notes or something.
I kept expecting the music to stop and a message from Sergei to start playing. like
he's burning it through the wax.
Yeah. Cause like, are the Russian officials or the Soviet officials really going to sit down and listen to an entire album, or will they listen to like the first 3 minutes of the first track?
I bet we find out how this works by the thing, but I bet it's involving them swapping music somehow. And you might be right. I thought they just like write something on the liner notes, but,
sure. Or write it inside the sleeve. Maybe.
I thought it was a beautiful dissolve where they go from the Mary Lou Williams Zodiac suite turning to the space station. I thought that was a great shot.
It is.
Very tasty.
And speaking of the space station, we go back to there, to Polaris, and Jimmy and Isaiah are smoking their joint into the vents, just like his mom taught him. while they talk about,
Can you imagine being like smoking and be like, dude, is it getting heavier in here?
Man, that's just the weed.
This is some good shit, man. I feel like I'm getting pushed into the floor almost. Like,
what strain did you say this was? 2G, man.
Yeah, man.
They're talking about being children of astronauts and their dead parents. Man, it's just a quick scene there.
It's a lot of pressure. You know, like you said, I'm the stepson of the woman who saved the world with the handshake. I'm the son of two heroes and a heroic brother. And what's that mean? But also, you can tell that Isaiah kind of likes Danielle, and his dad is over the moon with her. Thing reminds him of his mother. Like, I'm curious to see. Because these are going to be the protagonists of seasons 4 and 5, right? Like, that's just the way the show's. Like, I'm curious to see where they're going with all these kids.
From the little I know about Isaiah, I like him so far. Seems like a good kid. Jimmy's trying to corrupt him, but it's okay. Smoking weed ain't that bad.
Not his worst vices.
Oh, yeah. The EVA commences. Danny and Amber go back to their room to bang. And here's where I start to have a little bit of a problem. 1.4G is not like 1.1G, 1.01G, 0.4G. 1.4G is almost half again your body weight.
Yeah.
That is a lot of fucking weight to put on people who are dancing or banging in their bedroom. Like, I'm not sure at 1.4G, I would definitely notice, right? Like, that's the thing. I would absolutely notice that something is definitely wrong at 1.3G, probably 1.2G.
It would be interesting to test. Now, I understand that there is the slow boiling frog effect where you're increasing the gravity by 1/10 of a 10th every couple of minutes, and it's a constant acceleration. But I even thought, like, the faster you spin, like, you'd start to notice, like, the Coriolis effect. Like, you would start getting, you know, your head would tell your feet are moving at a different speed. Like, you know, this is not a big space station. It's spinning pretty fast. I bet if you poured that champagne, you'd get a little bit of an S-curve into it. I thought the same thing. Like, the way these people slowly realized was realistic, but I think they should have...
probably sooner they would have noticed.
Known something was wrong and started panicking a bit sooner,
Or notice something is wrong, but not be sure what a little bit sooner. Because at, like, 1.4G, I mean, if you weigh... you know, 150 pounds, what is that? It's like 60 more pounds. Like, if I suddenly weigh 60 more pounds, I would feel terrible. I would immediately notice. Like, there's no way I would
notice. And you might chalk it up
to,
oh, I had too much champagne, or, oh, man, the space is not good. But, like, you get up the, you know, I guess it's fair because, like, 1.5 is where they start showing people noticing for real. But it's like weird things like Ed and Devon are fighting in the room and she tries to throw her shoe at him and it lands on the bed instead of his face.
Right.
It's like, I think you'd notice. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, like I said, Danny and Amber go back to their room to bang. Ed and Devon are arguing and she throws the shoe at him. Like you said, it falls way too fast. And that's strange. And then people at the party, including Danielle, start to realize something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She sees the cake toppers, like we talked about. That behind her, in one of those shots, you can see the flowers. They're supposed to be standing up tall, start to droop and lean. Yeah. I thought that was cool.
There was some really cool gravitational effects. I agree. What do you think of Ed and Devon? I'm trying Devon? To... I thought it was Devon. It's Yvonne.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I thought it was
Yvonne. I thought, because you don't know. They just got married. I don't know this woman. And I could believe two things. I could believe that Ed is just a stick in the mud, stick up his ass kind of guy. And she's just having fun at a party. Maybe she's drinking a little bit too much. She's dancing. She's having fun. That's, I think, my main possibility. But also... you know, maybe he's been with a bunch of her parties and she drinks a lot at a lot of different parties and it's a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I'm not passing judgment on Devon just yet because I do know that Ed is a bit of a control freak and a little bit of, more of a straight lace kind of guy. But, like, I didn't think she's doing anything at the party to seem like it was embarrassing.
No, I didn't see her, like, grinding on the groom or anything. Yeah, when he pulls her away, I'm like, oh, this is Ed being a stick in the mud. Because I know so much about Ed that I'm inclined to give her the benefit of the doubt until I know more about her.
Could be that he's landed with a lady who's a little bit too much on the sauce. I don't know.
Could be. So then a cable breaks off the hotel and kills the EVA team. And the hotel is still spinning faster and faster. And cables are now flying around everywhere. And we're talking big-ass cables that when they hit the hotel, they can gouge out some of the wall and cause leaks. The cable hits Ed's window, and that's exactly what happens. They have to evacuate their room, and Ed is hurt in that process. And we see gravity almost at 2G now. Everybody knows something is wrong, right? The hotel, we find out, can't stand more than 4G, and they decide to evacuate.
That's probably if their support cables are intact. You know?
Sure, sure.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, this brings me to number two issue that I have with this space disaster scene. The way these cables behave are ridiculous. Like if they
right, they should be doing exactly what the hatches and the people who are on the outside are doing, right?
And like Danny at the end of the episode, yes. That's exact like I buy it sweeping when it first breaks and it's pulling to the bottom. I buy it sweeping and I buy it hitting things along the way, and I buy it waving a little bit once it gets to that terminal point. But these things are going around like fucking Medusa snake heads, and that's.
Yeah,
that's not possible. That's them playing games with the physics to increase the danger and tension. And like I said, I don't.
And you didn't need that either.
Right? That's
like,
what I'm saying.
I don't need the cables being a threat because the gravity is already a threat.
And I thought they handled it like a lot of people think that. Like I'm sure there are a lot of people think though that depressurization is unrealistic. But like most things in a spaceship are not going to explosively decompress because you've got one atmosphere. Against a delta V of zero atmosphere. It's not like the bottom of the fucking ocean where you've got thousands of atmospheres pushing down against one atmosphere. It's going to be a fairly, unless like a like you had on the moon where a whole window blows out and explosively decompresses a big volume. Mm-hmm. But if you got like a pinhole or something like that, yeah, you're definitely going to, but it's not going to be like in Aliens 4 where it completely sucks somebody's guts out through their belly button or some shit like that.
And that's what I love is when the way they depict this is, you know, a small crack opens up, right? And it starts sucking things to it, like the minor things in the room, which chip off a little bit more of that hole and open it wider. And then eventually, you know, bigger and bigger things get sucked through. It's like Katamari Damacy, right? Where it sucks up everything in the room bigger and bigger and bigger until the whole window blows out. And then you're screwed.
But I thought that was really realistic as opposed to the Medusa cables that they got going on this whole episode.
Yeah, totally. So the plan is, they're going to evacuate here. They need to get everyone to the center, I assumed, or because that's where the shuttles dock. They've got these elevators that we saw at the beginning, which go travel from the outer ring to the center where they can dock and get people off. Danny and Amber find Ed and Yvonne in another part of the hotel. They're kind of, you know, out by their guest suites.
There's also, if you look at Danielle's face when she gets to Isaiah, she can definitely smell the weed on him.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to watch for when you're watching it again, because she's you know, like putting her arms around him and she's like, whoa. You know? So have some splaining to do maybe on the ground. We'll see.
And as soon as they said they're going to use the elevators to evacuate, I was like, that could be a problem. Like, how overbuilt are these elevators, right? Because I know that elevators are overbuilt. The elevators can typically handle like three times the load that they're rated for, because you don't want to run the ragged edge of that, because people are stupid and they will climb in when they shouldn't. But 3G, you know, 2G approaching 3G and all the way to 4G is asking a lot of an elevator, as we find out here very quickly. And then that's what I love. The episode was always one. I like it when an episode is one step ahead of me, but doesn't reveal that until it's one step behind me. Right. Like I have questions that the episode has already thought of, but didn't reveal the answers to yet. Because we do get this elevator crashing down because of the G's, and Sam gets killed, right? I mean,
he's dead. His eyes wide open, blood on the floor.
Yeah, and under a pile of debris that used to be the elevator. I think he's done.
That's twice as heavy as it would be otherwise.
Right. Danny gets Karen on the radio and tells them to use the access shaft instead of the elevators, which have this ladder. It turns out Ed can't climb because of the extra G's and his leg, which is injured. So Danny says, hey, I'm going to climb up myself. I'm going to get some environment suits and I'm going to go out there and shut down that thruster. And the whole time, like, ceiling is falling around them. Like, ceiling panels are being pulled out of the drop ceiling, smashing down around them. I love all the visualization of this station being pulled apart.
It looks great.
Yeah.
And Danny's got the hero gene he inherited from his parents. You know, it's like he's going to throw himself selflessly into danger and exert maximum human. Like, I can't imagine what it'd be like to climb like four or five stories under 3G.
Right. Yeah.
Like carrying, like imagine climbing up that kind of ladder with two of you on your back. It's insane.
Yeah. And I have a little bit of a problem here that we'll talk about in a second. But the other thing is, like, with those cables flopping around, you're right, doubly so here, because you don't need that. When you see ceiling panels coming out, when you see elevators crashing, that gives you all of the danger and all of the ticking timer you need. I really didn't feel like I needed cables whipping back and forth.
Right. Or if you needed the cable to whip and menace Danny one last time, just have the other side of the support cable snap. You know, after he's turned, because like the other thing is, like, if all the support cables go on one of those arms, I just feel like the station loses integrity and everybody dies. But I thought that cable stuff was just like, every time it happened that they start waving around, I'm like, how? Because everything is consistently correct from a gravitational standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's just dramatic horseshit.
Yeah. So then Danny does go outside and he makes it to the engine and he manually shuts down the thruster. There's a moment here where he's hit by a cable. Like, as soon as he shuts it down, the cable whips around, hits him in the back, and the screen cuts away to something else.
I tell you, I was really like, There was no cable on that wrench. If that guy drops this heavy ass four times G thing, there everyone dies. I'm like, man, I thought astronauts had that shit strapped to their wrist or something, because I was just
right.
I was like, oh God, Danny, don't drop that spanner, man. Don't drop that wrench.
Yeah. And also, he's hanging there. Here's the big problem I have. He's hanging here at four times his body weight. This is at 4G from one hand. Even lifting that wrench is going to be a big ask.
Oh, he was attached to a steel cable, though. He was attached to, like, he was rappelling down. That was still attached to him.
I know, but that's the tether. You see how long that tether is, right? When he's hanging out there after the Gs start dropping. He's hanging by one hand without the tether holding
him.
I'm not so sure anybody can hang at 4G from one hand. You'd have to be incredibly strong to do that.
Yeah. Especially after you climb four stories with, I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you've banged at like 1.5G to start the night.
That takes your legs out, kid. You can't bang a woman and then go and do a 4G spacewalk. Come
Maybe
on,
he
Danny.
He drank a lot of eggs that morning. I don't know.
He did. You missed the pre wedding chug of a dozen egg yolks.
Yeah. Anyway, the G's start dropping. Everyone's saved. Even Danny, who was saved by his tether. Is this where you get to the potential quadriplegic, paraplegic?
That cable. Theories? That horseshit Medusa cable hit him right in the back.
Yeah.
And he's just hanging there limp in like a Jesus position. And he's not in any, he's awake. He's conscious. He doesn't seem to be in any distress, but he's not moving at all. I just wonder.
What do you do though? You're hanging at multiple G's.
He could just be relaxing. That's spinning. He could just be like, you know, like just taking a moment, but.
Or he could just be like, well, I guess they'll reel me in when they get a chance, because I ain't moving at 3G, right?
But then why knock him off? Like, why have him not? Like, if unless there's going to be a consequence of being knocked off, why do that? It's not like a cliffhanger, because literally 10 seconds after he gets knocked off, they show him dangling there, and they make it clear that he's alive. He's not dead. Mm-hmm. His eyes are looking around.
A micro
breathing.
Cliffhanger, like, for that scene, like that final scene you're supposed 15, to be questioning.
That's a micro. That's a Quibi cliffhanger.
But you could be right. There could be more to that. But we'll see. That's the end of the episode.
Did you know that Michael Lacuda and his wife, Denise, are technical advisors in this show?
Who are they?
You don't know who Michael Lacuda is? He's the guy that created the LCAR system for TNG. Oh. He did a lot of the set and spaceship design.
What is he consulting on?
He's their technical advisor. One of their technical. So like he's doing spaceship.
Really?
Yeah, I read up on him because I have, you know, like I lost track of him. I was a big fan of his throughout the TNG and Deep Space Nine years. But apparently he's done a lot of design work for NASA, not just for like logos and stuff, but for some human interface stuff. And he got in 2007, I think, the NASA like private citizen award for outstanding achievement for all the stuff he's done for them. So I don't know.
So technical advisor must mean UI consultant or designing ships or something, not like science advisor, right?
I think he's more I actually got a little of a CUDA feel from the graphics of the control station.
Yeah, I suppose.
So he's probably a lot of that, but I don't know. It just made my heart happy to see him advising for the show because
yeah, that's cool.
He was one of the main tech dudes for Deep Space Nine and TNG.
Definitive. I mean, the look of the LCAR system is just perfect, in my opinion. I can't imagine a cooler, more space appropriate interface.
Yeah. But on the other hand, Michael, you're asleep at the switch on this ho situation, or maybe you were shouted down.
Yeah, I hope he didn't technically advise them on that, because that wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you grab a garden hose, like 3 or 4 feet of it, start swinging it. And at a constant or even accelerating and tell me if it just starts whipping around in all types of different directions.
Yeah.
That was fucking crazy. Anyway, that's an episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is our first episode. No one has seen this yet, so we're recording it ahead of time so you guys can enjoy this this podcast analysis as soon as the episode drops. But we would love to hear what you think about this season opener. The good, the bad, the ugly, the technically impossible. Did you notice it? Did you even care? Is it just me and Jim here being nerd mean bullies to Ronald Moore? Let us know at fam, F-A-M, at baldmove.com. That's how you send us feedback each week. Again, depending on how much feedback we get, we'll either do a midweek kind of release to kind of catch up on feedback, or if there's only, you know, a handful, a smattering, we'll probably just append it to the end of next week's show. But it's in your hands. F-A-M stands for All Mankind, of course, at baldmove.com. And that'll do it for this week's episode. Until next time, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.